A psychiatrist sits beside his dying mother, wrestling with an unexpected flood of anger and indifference. For years, he'd kept her at arm's length, armed with professional detachment and unspoken resentments. But then he does something radical. He listens. Really listens. As she recounts being orphaned at 3 years old, something shifts. The anger dissolves. Compassion rushes in. In that moment, he discovers what neuroscience is only beginning to confirm, that being truly known by another person rewires not just our relationships, but our brains themselves. This isn't therapy speak or spiritual platitude. It's biology meeting theology. And the implications change everything about how we understand transformation, faith, and what it means to be human. Here's what we're learning. Your brain isn't just the hardware running your spiritual software. The two are inseparable, woven together in ways that would have seemed impossible a generation ago. The right hemisphere of your brain, the side that develops first, before you can even speak, creates your sense of connection, your ability to read a room, your felt experience of we. It's holistic, present-focused, attuned to the emotional temperature of every interaction. Meanwhile, your left hemisphere develops later, giving you language, logic, linear thinking, and your sense of I as a distinct individual. Both sides must work together. When they don't, you end up fragmented, knowing the right answers but unable to feel them, or feeling everything but unable to make sense of it. Your brain operates in three layers. The reptilian core manages breathing and heartbeat. The limbic middle generates emotions, fear, joy, anger, connection. The prefrontal cortex enables reflection, empathy, and choosing responses rather than reacting. Sometimes your higher brain overrides impulses. You don't punch someone who cuts you off. Other times, your thinking brain ignores emotional signals. You stay in a toxic relationship because logically it should work. Integration means all parts working in harmony, what scripture calls an undivided heart. What you focus on shapes your brain. Neurons that fire together wire together. The real question isn't just what am I paying attention to, but how well am I paying attention to what I'm paying attention to? God often speaks through what we've trained ourselves to ignore: bodily sensations, fleeting emotions, the quality of our presence. Consider Moses and the burning bush. God doesn't speak until Moses turns aside to look. The miracle was already happening. Moses had to choose to notice. How many burning bushes do we walk past daily? We all have blind spots, areas where we're unaware of our unawareness. Paul's claim that our bodies are temples means God doesn't bypass our neurobiology, he inhabits it. You are a walking collection of memories, most operating outside conscious awareness. Your brain encodes experience in multiple systems, maturing at different rates. Implicit memory starts at birth, operating automatically while you can ride a bike without thinking, or why your stomach tightens at your partner's certain tone. These early patterns become living memory, automatic responses that feel like truth, but are actually well-worn neural pathways carved by repetition. Roughly 80% of emotional conflict between couples originates from events before they met. When your girlfriend furrows her brow in concentration, your brain might interpret it as anger, not because of anything she's done, but because a parent's furrowed brow once meant trouble. You're responding to a memory you don't know you're having. Explicit memory. The kind you consciously recall develops later, around 18, 24 months. Every recall changes memory. Through attention and relationship, even painful memories can be rewoven into stories of redemption. Many wish to eliminate uncomfortable emotions, anger, neediness, grief, shame-seeing feelings as obstacles to clear thinking. But emotion isn't optional. It's the very energy around which your brain organizes itself. Without it, you'd be paralyzed, unable to assign value or meaning. Scripture reveals a deeply emotional God, compassionate, angry, grieving, rejoicing. When God says, "My heart is changed within me, all my compassion is aroused," we glimpse divine emotional life, suggesting our capacity for feeling reflects something essential about God's nature. Emotion operates on multiple levels. Before conscious awareness, your body reacts: elevated heart rate, changed breathing, stress hormones. This is primary emotion. Your brain constantly scanning, comparing present with past patterns, preparing for action. The word emotion literally means all motion, preparing for movement. As primary responses intensify, you become aware of categorical emotions: shame, guilt, anger, sadness, joy, fear. But your interpretation is often colored by history. You see your wife's expression and automatically read anger because it resembles how your mother looked years ago. Your response looking away, getting defensive made sense with your mother but might be completely wrong with your wife, whose expression actually indicates anxiety or need for closeness. From your first breath, your brain has been wired by relationship. The parent-child bond forms through thousands of daily interactions. How quickly caregivers respond to distress, whether they share in your joy, the quality of their presence. Though you couldn't consciously reflect on these experiences as an infant, your right brain neurons rapidly formed connections based on every nonverbal cue. These patterns become templates for all future relationships, including your relationship with God. Research reveals four primary attachment styles. Secure attachment, about 65% of people, develops when caregivers respond consistently with compassion. These individuals trust that others will be there when needed. Avoidant attachment forms when parents are emotionally unavailable, leading to emotionally flat stories and a distant God. Ambivalent attachment emerges from inconsistent, intrusive caregiving, creating a preoccupied orientation where emotions overwhelm logic. Disorganized attachment develops when caregivers are both source of comfort and terror, profoundly disrupting intimacy and coherent understanding of God. Here's the hope. Attachment patterns can transform through earned secure attachment. This requires significant encounters with empathic relationships, a teacher who truly sees you, a therapist who helps you tell your story differently. The common denominator is opening yourself to being known. This is precisely what God does with all believers, moving us from insecurity to security by allowing his story to intersect with ours. Behind your forehead sits your brain's command center, the prefrontal cortex, where attention, memory, emotion, and attachment converge. When integrated, you pause between feeling and acting, read others with empathy, regulate stress, and make values-aligned choices. When integration fails, you experience train wrecks, shouting at your child, stonewalling your spouse, numbing with substances. An integrated prefrontal cortex creates life that is flexible, adaptive, coherent, energized, and stable, forming the acronym FACES. When triggered, your heart races and thoughts spiral. Your prefrontal cortex becomes unhinged from other brain regions. You literally flip your lid, losing access to empathy and balance. You descend through vulnerability to hurt, to shame, to anger, finally reaching contempt, the primary predictor of relationship failure. The journey back starts with body awareness. Notice your racing heart, clenched jaw, shallow breathing, your early warning system. Practices like body scans or yoga strengthen neural connections, helping you detect emotional shifts earlier. Writing and sharing your story breaks old patterns, creating compassion and opening space for change. Your feelings and memories aren't obstacles to spiritual life. They're the territory where God dwells. Scripture defines sin as separation from God, others, and yourself neurologically. This correlates with mental disintegration. Redemption involves integration of the mind, revealing that God works through our neurobiology, not around it. Understanding redemption requires both hemispheres: left brain theological language and right brain felt experience of relationship. At the heart of toxic disconnection lies shame, the painfully acute awareness that something is fundamentally wrong with you. Shame develops before language, encoded through facial expressions and tone as early as 18 months. It's so uncomfortable, we'll do almost anything to avoid it, driving us toward disintegration and mindless reactions. But the gospel's essence is that God, through Jesus' death and resurrection, has extinguished fear, shame, and death. The cross represents both God's firm no to evil and his triumphant yes to new creation. Jesus' cry from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me?" wasn't despair, but a quotation of Psalm 22, which begins with suffering but concludes with vindication. Through his death and resurrection, God repairs the primal rupture of Genesis 3, making integration possible through relationship, not willpower. Consider Jesus' restoration of Peter after his denial. Jesus doesn't shame or lecture. He asks three times, "Do you love me, Anjur?" Matching the three denials, creating space for Peter to rewrite his story through confession and renewed commitment. The writer of Hebrews reveals Jesus' approach. He scorned shame, acknowledged it, then disregarded it to focus on the joy of sitting with his Father. This is the pattern for all of us. Your brain isn't a machine to be fixed, but a story being rewritten. Every moment of genuine connection, every pause before reacting, every instance of being truly known reshapes your neural pathways. The transformation Scripture promises isn't a future event requiring white-knuckled endurance. Until heaven, it's happening now, through the ordinary miracle of paying attention, opening yourself to being known, and allowing God's story to intersect with yours. Will you turn aside to look at the burning bush? Will you risk being known? Your next conversation, conflict, or moment of shame or joy is an invitation to practice resurrection, to choose integration, to become more fully human. This is the gospel written in neurons and synapses, the kingdom breaking into your lived experience. The psychiatrist beside his dying mother discovered this in real time. When he stopped offending and simply listened, his brain literally changed. New neural pathways formed. Old resentments dissolved. Compassion flooded in where anger had lived. Ancient wisdom and cutting-edge neuroscience converge. We are made for connection, and in connection, we are remade.